Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Ron DeSantis and his Lieutenant Governor-elect Jeanette Nunez are preparing the transition now between the Rick Scott administration and theirs. The DeSantis and Nunez ticket ran on a platform of continuing growth with our already strong economy, battling the algal problems that we see plaguing Florida's coastlines, and of course, keeping taxes low, just to name a few. Nunez, by the way, will become the highest-ranking Latina ever in Florida politics. Well, she joins us now, and we welcome your calls. What are the issues you want to see the DeSantis administration tackle right away, and what do you hope they're going to accomplish in the next 4 years? The number is 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. You can also post your question on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Lieutenant Governor-elect Jeanette Nunez, great to have you back.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Congratulations, by the way. It was a close race, as tends to be in Florida, and of course we had a recount. Your race was one of three of the major races that had to go to recount. I wanted your take just real quickly on how that all went down. Brenda Snipes, the Broward County Supervisor of Elections, resigns. Palm Beach County had issues as well with old machines, but that whole week, tell us what was going on.
Certainly, we were confident that the results on election night were going to prevail. We were confident that when all is said and done, unfortunately, we had some problem areas in the state. But for the most part, all of our counties run a good shop. In particular, I'm proud of Miami-Dade County. Obviously, they showed their county neighboring to the north how it's done or how it should be done. But certainly, I think that it was a concern.
Do you have confidence, though, that because 2020 will be here before you know it, that
sure
you have
will.
Confidence that these problems will be fixed and that we're going to be ready?
Well, certainly, I think from Broward's perspective and possibly Palm Beach and maybe one or two other counties, I think that there certainly needs to be a change in leadership. And obviously, Brenda Snipes has indicated she's going to resign, too little, too late in my book. But I do believe that the next person that takes over those potentially hotspot areas, those problem counties, really have a tremendous responsibility to clean house, because it's not just one person's problem, right? I believe Broward County and perhaps Palm Beach County have systemic problems. They have problems throughout the organization. And so I really do believe that the next person that takes over in Broward really needs to look at the operation, really needs to look at what is it that's gone wrong so consistently election cycle after election cycle. And I believe that the legislature has a desire to ensure that the integrity of the votes are preserved for the next election and beyond.
One of the other issues, too, was we talk about machines, because Palm Beach County had machines that were heating up and they had to do one race at a time. So is it something the state has to talk about in making sure that every county has upgraded technology to be able to keep up? Because 2020, we're going to have more voters.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And certainly in a presidential election, indeed, we have a lot more voters. And I think that that's going to be a concern to make sure that that the voters feel confident that their vote is going to count. I believe that obviously the incumbent is upon the leader, in that case, a supervisor of election, to ensure that her equipment is functioning, to ensure that if she has any challenges, that she communicates that. And I believe that the legislature is committed to making sure that the election runs smoothly. We do not want to be in the headlines 2 years from now. We do not want people looking at Florida as yet again the problem child of the country, and we want to make sure that elections are running well, they're transparent, and that people have faith in the process, because so many people 90 miles south of us don't have that freedom, and we want to make sure that we preserve that integrity for the process.
And I do want to ask you about our neighbors to the south in a little bit. Let's tackle some of the issues that have been in the news. This one, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Safety Commission was meeting again recently. Now, they're going to wrap up soon, and they're supposed to come out with a report on what they found from the shooting on February 14th and how we can make schools safer. The head of that commission is Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri, and he said that he now thinks that teachers should be allowed to be armed. This is in the law. So your take on that, though, especially as a mother, how do you feel about the idea of teachers or anybody in the school that's not a police officer or one of the resource officers being armed?
That's certainly a contentious issue. It's something we dealt with when I was in the legislature just a few short months ago, when we were dealing with that particular aspect of the legislation. And I will tell you, and I believe we might have talked about it previously, but I will tell you that program, their FICE Guardian program, is an optional program. So it's completely voluntary for sheriffs that choose to proceed with it, for school boards that choose to administer it, and for teachers or other personnel that choose to participate. So there's sort of three levels of voluntary, optional aspects to that program. There's a lot of people that think it's not a good idea. There's a lot of people that do. Rural counties in particular, counties where the response time for law enforcement may be a challenge in terms of protecting the safety and well-being of those students. As a mother, I can tell you, I certainly think that given the rigorous requirements that's in the legislation, because you don't want to do knee-jerk reaction to a tragedy like what we saw on February 14th. But as a mother, the requirements that are in there, the rigorous requirements that they pass background checks, mental screenings, that they engage in hundreds of hours, over 100 hours of training, that they meet certain requirements, those give me a level of comfort.
And I want to clarify too, because there's the Guardian program that's separate from the other part of the law, which is, again, talking about whether anyone who works at the school could be armed. What are you hopes coming out of this report, this commission? Again, the report is expected early next year.
The report will come before the legislature, obviously, and the governor will get a copy of it early January. I know that they have looked at a lot of footage, a lot of video that I'm sure was very troubling for members of that panel, to particularly those parents. And I know Andy Pollack has been an active participant in that, and others. And so I really think what we'll see is really the systemic failures, because it wasn't just one particular aspect. It wasn't just the Broward Sheriff's Office, those deputies that chose not to go into the building, which was troubling in and of itself. It wasn't just the school board and their quote-unquote promise program that turned a blind eye to the level of issues that individual had. It wasn't just their perhaps the implementation or their lack thereof of significant security measures and ignoring the challenges that they saw day in and day out with that particular student, but others. And let's be honest, I'm sure that there are other issues within school districts throughout the state and throughout this country where there are individuals that are in need of some serious mental health. And I think that's another aspect that we're really going to need to continue to focus on.
And again, this commission meets monthly and their report is expected early next year. Again, talking with Lieutenant Governor-elect Jeanette Nunez, and we'd love to hear your thoughts, your questions. Do you have a question about what you hope to see the DeSantis administration tackle right away? What's important for this first upcoming legislative session with the new administration, with some of the new elected officials? What do you hope they accomplish over the next 4 years? 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. Or again, Facebook or Twitter, you can post your question there and I will read them off. Let's move over to the other big story nationally, but a big impact in Florida is the climate change report that comes out of the White House. Look, we've heard these stories. We had the UN report. So we've already heard about, if we continue on the path we're going by the end of the century, the issues that we're going to face nationally, national security issues, GDP could take a big hit. We're talking about all of these problems. I don't need to repeat them to you, but let me start with this. Do you believe the consensus of scientists who say that human beings have a massive impact on our climate and we are going down this path?
Well, certainly. I think if you look at what Ron DeSantis has said, I know that's probably where you're going to want to go next.
Well, I can only ask you. So yeah, if sure. He comes in, I'm going to ask him. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, certainly, of course. But it's one of many factors. And so I know that there's a lot of angst, a lot of controversy over climate change and global warming and the back and forth between labels and people that are labeled as believers or deniers. And I think what's important to realize is that absolutely we need to do something. Absolutely, we need to make sure that we are looking at it from a global perspective. But I haven't had a chance to review the report. I assume that that I will in the coming days. But what I will tell you is at the state level, we're committed, and Ron is committed to making sure that we're addressing environmental issues that are specific here to Florida. And I know that he's been very vocal on it. In particular, you mentioned at the onset of the algae blooms, both blue-green algae and red tide, and other issues specific to our environment, in particular the Everglades here in South Florida. And so what he said is he wants to make sure that he's appointing the best, most qualified individuals that have accurate information, that have the science background, that have the knowledge and the know-how to address issues that are important for us here. And that's through our South Florida Water Management District. Yeah.
I know you talk about the labels do exist because there are people who say they believe it's a hoax. And you know that it's been linked more to your party than the Democrats.
Sure.
But here's one thing. I mean, under the Rick Scott administration, there was the controversy that there were people in agencies in state government that weren't even using the term climate change. I mean, is that something that's going to come up again, or is it, are we just going to say it? Look, can we talk about climate change?
Well, I can't speak to Rick Scott's administration.
No, exactly.
Right.
I'm talking
Absolutely.
About you.
Well, I will tell you that Ron DeSantis is committed to looking at things from a very scientific, evidence-based practice. And so there's not going to be a prohibition on a word or on a concept or on an issue. And I think what he wants to do is tackle issues that are important to Florida. And that, of course, includes issues to our environment. And so he's been very transparent on that. He's been very forward thinking, I believe. And I think Floridians saw that not only in the campaign, but I think they'll see that in his administration.
There are two things I want to tackle real quickly with this. One, property and flood insurance costs. We're already seeing that go up. And they are talking about with increased storms, and floodwaters coming in, that insurance costs are just going to go up. You want to build a state on low taxes, but if insurance goes up, that makes it very difficult to live here. How does the administration tackle this aspect of it? This goes into the resiliency aspect of for example, sea level rise and climate change.
Right. Well, I think about a year ago or maybe a little longer, the legislature had passed a piece of legislation that asked a multidisciplinary approach of work groups from different agencies, all with the express purpose of looking at challenges such as what you just indicated. And so everything from global warming to sea level rise and things that are going to affect Florida as a whole. In particular, we see that here in South Florida. But I believe that the legislature approved that probably a little bit over a year ago. And I believe that the administration will look at the reports and look at sort of what that work group has put forth and what we think are going to be important issues for resiliency.
You know that, for example, South Florida, the different counties, they created their own resiliency officers. And they formed their own group, really, one big group, a collective, to tackle the issues of sea level rise but also climate change. Is this something that really is more on the local level, or how much does the state have to play in this?
Well, again, each county has maybe different challenges. And again, we see our challenges are unique and different to what folks in North Florida are dealing with. But I do believe the state has a role to play. Obviously, when you have 67 different counties with 67 different approaches to how do we ensure Florida for the long term is really going to be shielded from some of these challenges. And we saw it with the hurricane, not just Irma, but obviously Michael and some of the challenges that we face as a state. And so I think a big issue for our incoming governor-elect is going to be readiness and emergency management. And all of that sort of encompasses some of the things that we're talking about.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about this is solar energy. Now, we have seen an increase in solar energy, but I'm curious as to what the DeSantis-Nunez administration feels about, increasing solar energy in the state. Right now, when you look at it, we're ranked eighth in how much solar energy we produce. I mean, I understand some of the states on that list, Arizona, Nevada, my old stomping grounds, lots of solar energy to pick out. Why are we eighth? This is the Sunshine State. I'm curious at what your administration feels about solar energy and you want to attract business to the state. Is that part of the plan?
I certainly think that that's something that we could look at. I've not talked to Governor-elect specifically about solar energy, but I'm sure that's going to be on his docket of things to look at. And why are we eighth? And so for him, I know he wants us to be first in a lot of things, all good things, right? All positive things. And I think that that's an opportunity if we can compete with other states and make Florida a more attractive state in that regard. I'm sure that's something that he'll be willing to look at.
Again, we're talking with Lieutenant Governor-elect Jeanette Nunez, and we're discussing top priorities for the DeSantis-Nunez administration. They are in the transition period right now between their administration, of course, the Rick Scott administration. The number is 800-743-9576. What do you want to see this administration tackle? Let's start with Lewis in Miami. No relation. Lewis, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Yes.
Go ahead, Lewis.
My question Lieutenant Governor, is, given that Floridians overwhelmingly passed the medical marijuana amendment in 2016, I believe. The current Department of Health has, put a lot of roadblocks in toward the implementation of that. What do you guys feel like your guys' priorities will be to lessen those roadblocks since this is a constitutional right that we all approved?
All right, Lewis, thank you so much for the call. Yes, it was a couple of years ago, voters overwhelmingly for medical marijuana, but there have been complaints that the legislature has not been true to the wishes of the voters. But you've been in the legislature. Your take on that, and how will you tackle this issue?
Well, thank you, Lewis, for calling. It's a great question, and we heard that a lot. Obviously, given some of the slow approach to implementation from the Department of Health and some concerns with how they've handled the issue. And so I think actually Governor DeSantis has been very, very vocal on that. And he has talked about what he wants to make sure is adhering to the will of the voters. And I think what he is planning on doing is ensuring that the person he appoints to head up the Department of Health is someone that understands that they absolutely must comply with the will of the voters as it relates to any potential litigation. I think he's not interested in going down that route. And I think he really wants to make sure that people that truly, genuinely need access to medical, to medicinal marijuana will have that opportunity.
This comes back to this question of is it more on the state, or should you just let the local communities decide for themselves how much they want that industry?
I believe that it's an important state component. I believe that obviously it was a constitutional amendment, so we have a responsibility to, again, adhere to the will of the voters. And I think that's something that Governor DeSantis is looking to do. I think he wants to make sure that the department is put on notice, that their attempt to implement and thwart the will of the voters is not acceptable. And I think that he's going to take measures to make sure whoever is heading up that department, that they understand that there is a responsibility to implement.
Another big issue, of course, in the news is immigration. Now, you've had some interesting stances on immigration, which is generally under the purview of the federal government. But for instance, as a state representative, you put forward a bill to give undocumented students in-state tuition at Florida colleges. Where do you and Governor-elect DeSantis stand on the issue of services for undocumented immigrants? How do we approach this issue moving forward?
Well, I think what you've heard Governor DeSantis say on the campaign trail is, as it relates to undocumented individuals that are here that commit crimes, he wants to make sure that they are deported as quickly as they are released. And so that's been his focus from a state perspective. And so as it relates to services, certainly, you know, when undocumented individuals present at an ED, obviously they are taken care of by federal regulation, by EMTALA. And so there's nothing to be done at the state level with that regard. Certainly when they get K through 12, they come into the K through 12 system, they receive educational services. So there's really not a role for the state to play with regard to services of undocumented on those two fronts.
What was your intention when you were first working on that bill? And I mean, I'm just wondering, like, where do you want to go with that? Or is it different now?
Well, no. I mean, I sponsored the bill. The bill was supported by a majority of individuals in both the House and the Senate. And what we were hoping to do is to provide an opportunity. The state spent over $90,000 educating kids in the K through 12 system. And so that's a lot of money that is poured into students from every walk of life, correct? So when these students graduated high school, they were priced out of the market, if you will. These are students that reside here. Some of them were brought here through no fault of their own. Some of them didn't even know they were undocumented until which time they graduated high school and tried to apply for a university or a college at the state level. And so come, you know, upon graduation, they want to continue their studies. And as any parent of a college age student, which I am one, understands, the difference between in-state tuition and out-of-state tuition is cost prohibitive. And so this was an opportunity for them to continue their studies. And it was a very narrowly crafted bill. It was a bill that addressed some of the legitimate concerns that people perhaps on the other side of the issue had. And so we really tried to do it in a way that was responsible and allowed for continued opportunity.
You mentioned Cuba earlier. I just wanted to ask you very quickly. I mean, under President Obama, we were trying to reopen conversations with Cuba. But we have now seen, you know, the power shift in Cuba, though really not a lot has changed. But under DeSantis, under your administration, how are we moving forward? It is a federal issue on some level, but this is we have a very interesting relationship with Cuba, of course, Florida being right there. how do we deal with that relationship with Cuba moving forward? What are you going to do?
Well, it is a federal issue, but for the state of Florida, I think it's very appropriate. And for me, it's personal. And so I would tell you that Governor DeSantis is very committed to ensuring that that we see a free Cuba. And so, you know, when you hear him talk about indicting Raul Castro for his role in the shoot down of the Brothers to the Rescue, which occurred back in the mid-90s, I mean, he's committed to the cause. And he understands, he's heard from a lot of the exile community, and he's heard a lot of the challenges. But from the state level, I can tell you, we are very committed to making sure that, even though, like you said, power, quote unquote, has shifted, but nothing has changed. And so human rights abuses continue to occur just 90 miles south of us. And that's something that concerns both of us.
I know this is also still a federal level, but again, because Florida is such a unique state, you know, the wet foot, dry foot is gone, but you still have Cubans trying to get out. Venezuela is another issue. People desperate. Haiti, again, protection status for a lot of people is disappearing. What role do we play as a state in helping people, whether it's Cuba, Haiti, Venezuela? They're desperate, but the federal government has put its foot down and said, you know, protections are going to end, or they're not accepting all asylum seekers. But what should we do?
Well, again, those are very much federal issues, temporary protection status, whether it's for Haitians or other Central Americans. I think obviously Governor DeSantis is very committed to the cause of liberty and to the cause of freedom. And so to the extent that we work with our federal partners and we understand what their challenges are, I think it's critical for us here in South Florida in particular, because we see the bulk of those asylum seekers. And so he's been very verbal and very vocal on Venezuela. He's been very vocal on Nicaragua and some of our other brethren to the south of us. And so, again, these are federal issues, but it's always nuanced and it's always complex.
Let me finish up on this. A couple of things real quickly. As I said, you are the first Latina in this position, in a very high position, the only first Latina lieutenant governor in the state of Florida, and I believe only the second in the entire United States. Yesterday, we heard from Agriculture Commissioner-elect Nikki Fried, and we asked her about the fact that this was the year of the woman. We saw a lot of women win positions in state legislatures and in Congress. Something interesting she said. I wanted your take.
I do think that women have a different negotiation style. That is not about ego. It's about getting the right result. And so I come to a table and not come with my ego, come with wanting to be solution driven.
So she says something about women have a different approach when it comes to politics. Your take on that, regardless of party, your take on that.
Women do have a different approach, I believe, at least in my term, in my four terms in the legislature. I really focused on working hard and on pushing forward issues that I cared about and that I was passionate about. And oftentimes those issues came to a head and I would have to negotiate with colleagues from both sides of the aisle, male colleagues and colleagues from North Florida that didn't really understand the South Floridian's perspective. And so I think it's important to really share your underlying motives for why you're doing what you're trying to do. And I also think it's important to be passionate and really be genuine about what you're trying to accomplish. And so to her comment about not having egos, I mean, I know plenty of women that have egos. Let's not kid ourselves. But I do believe we have a different style and a different technique. But for me, I've always just focused on doing the right thing, trying to really push forward things that are important to me. And I hope to do that as Lieutenant Governor. And so I don't look at it from the prism of first female Hispanic ranking, the highest ranking in the state of Florida, although it's a tremendous honor and responsibility. I look at it from someone that really just wants to do a good job and push forward a great agenda for Florida.
In 30 seconds, what's the first thing you want to tackle once you get into office?
Certainly prop up the administration in a way that's going to be efficient, effective, and work for Floridians. Imagine trying to start a government from scratch. And so I've been really active in working with the governor-elect on trying to get the best people in the job. State government is not the most lucrative opportunity for people, but we want good qualified people that are passionate, people that share our vision. I want to continue to be involved in issues related to preparedness and emergency management. Given my experience in healthcare, I will likely have an active role in healthcare.
The studio is always open for you or for the governor, DeSantis, to please come in. We'd love to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It was great speaking with you.
Again, Lieutenant Governor-elect Jeanette Nunez, and they are in that transition period now between the Rick Scott administration and the Ron DeSantis administration. I want to make a quick note, by the way, a correction from the conversation that we had yesterday with Agriculture Commissioner-elect Nikki Fried. I mistakenly referred to the Florida cabinet as the Governor-elect Ron DeSantis cabinet. No, the Florida cabinet is not appointed by the governor. It is made up of the statewide elected positions of the governor as the chair, the state's chief financial officer, the attorney general, and the agriculture commissioner. Just wanted to clarify that.